Empower Communications against Illinois Bell Telephone. Mr. Moore.
And please the court. 3 years ago, we were before this court and to the predecessor of this case, AT&T versus Illinois Bell. Now Illinois Bell is AT&T, and if I accidentally say SBC, which is Illinois Bell's former parent, it's just from force of habit. I will try to say Illinois Bell through this case, just to keep things clear. Now, in that AT&T case, you held that the state law telling the Illinois Commerce Commission how to rule on Illinois Bell's rate request for changes to the charges it makes for unbundled network elements was preempted by the Federal Telecommunications Act. So you sent the case back to the Illinois Commerce Commission for it to decide on the proper rates for Illinois Bell. And now we're here to see whether that order, which came after your decision, is proper. Now, the first issue I want to talk about is preemption. And this issue relates to the method used by the Illinois Commerce Commission to set Illinois Bell's rates. And it used the tariff method, which started out because SBC filed a tariff with the Illinois Commerce Commission. The commission suspended that tariff. We went through hearings. The legislature intervened. We came back to this court. We went back to the Illinois Commerce Commission. And that tariff was resurrected by the Illinois Commerce Commission and then, under the Illinois Public Utilities Act, suspended and investigated. And in the final order, the Illinois Commerce Commission said that it would treat the case procedurally as a state law tariff proceeding, but substantively as a generic rate-making proceeding under the Federal Telecommunications Act. So the question really is, can the Illinois Commerce Commission procedurally affect the TELRIC rates of the CLECs with a tariff proceeding? Now, we believe that in this court, in its Bayh decision, that is Wisconsin Bell versus Bayh, very clearly said you cannot use tariffs to set the terms and conditions for interconnection agreements. And in that case, this court spent quite a bit of time discussing the effect of a tariff on the rates in interconnection agreements and how the parties should be negotiating those rates and failing negotiation, arbitrating those rates all under the federal act, and then failing after those arbitration orders come out, those decisions are then appealed to the federal courts. Instead, in the Bayh decision, the commission there had a tariff, which was through the state proceedings and would have resulted in various state implications, including...
What do you think is the consequence if we agree with you on this point?
The consequence would be that the Illinois Commerce Commission would have to go back and decide how to do it.
I don't think the Illinois Commerce Commission goes and does anything. Your argument is that the statutory scheme has to be applied in a pristine way. And that seems to me to mean that if this is preempted, then Illinois Bell can name its rate and all your clients and any other CLEC has to pay those rates until it can negotiate with Illinois Bell for lower rates. And if Illinois Bell isn't compliant, seek arbitration.
Illinois Bell can't just set its rates. It's going to have to negotiate a rate. And
Illinois
until then,
Bell, like any other ILEC under this statute, can set its rates, and then you negotiate from there. That was what we said in Wisconsin Bell against B was the approach. And if you want us to say that that controls, it seems to me Illinois Bell can set any rate it wants and start the negotiation process. That's not what you think should happen.
No, of course not. If it would go back to the Illinois Commerce Commission, would
no,
it
wouldn't go back to the Illinois.
You're right. It would go back to the arbitration.
That's the whole point.
It would go
it
back
goes
to
back to Illinois Bell.
It goes back to the parties. Illinois Bell would say this is what we want to charge. We would say no, we want you to charge this. We would negotiate. Failing negotiation, we go to the arbitration. And if a group of our, if the
and
commission wants to consolidate those,
you would pay whatever Illinois Bell wants you to pay.
I'm not too sure if that's correct. I'm not too sure that's really settled what would happen next. And I don't think this court should decide it based on that factor of what would happen next. I mean,
because we said the last time that Illinois Bell had signed 5-year contracts under this procedure and was entitled at the end of the 5 years to be rid of those contracts. And it seems to me that means if you're right, we go back to square one. Those contracts are gone. and the parties negotiate from scratch. And the usual way you negotiate is that you pay the other side's price until you get some institution to order a lower one.
Well, you're assuming that the contracts are gone. The contracts have continued in existence.
You can have it one way or the other. You cannot have it both ways. You obviously want it both ways. That's what's troubling me about your position.
What we expect is in the buy decision, this court set out a standard. Now, as it turns out, you know, SBC didn't challenge the Illinois Commerce Commission method of going by tariff. I don't see how this court would have upheld the decision if SBC was here arguing that buy precludes what the commission did. The fact that we're doing it, I don't see where that makes a change.
Well, in your sense? That's the merits. And, of course, that's the next question. The holding of buy is that a phone company cannot be forced to publish a tariff that anybody can take advantage of. Buy certainly doesn't hold that phone companies are prohibited from filing tariffs. Now, your argument is that phone companies are prohibited from filing tariffs. And that certainly doesn't follow from buy. Is there something in the statute that prohibits a phone company from filing a tariff if it wants to?
Well, it gets back into the reasons that
you... Look, that can be answered by reference to some statutory language or not. Is there something in the statute that prohibits phone companies from filing tariffs?
No. And, in fact, it wasn't until this court's decision in Bay that people started wondering. And the commission asked the parties to say what happens
now. If
there's
nothing in the statute that prohibits it, then state proceeding isn't preempted. Isn't that what follows?
There's nothing that explicitly prohibits tariff proceedings, but there was nothing explicitly prohibiting tariffs in Bay or Wisconsin Bell either. This court determined that when you use a tariff, that raises all sorts of issues relating to state procedures.
The U in Wisconsin Bell against Bay is a state commission. The holding is that a state commission cannot force the incumbent to proceed by way of tariff when dealing with new entrants. I'm just trying to figure out whether there's anything in the statute that prohibits it. And this is something that has to be answered by reference to the statute.
And I would agree with you. There's nothing in the statute that I've found that says a word about tariff. It wasn't until the two decisions this court issued in Wisconsin and Indiana that the problems with tariffs arose. And you had reasons for that, that it raised the implication of state appeal procedures. With a tariff, you have all sorts of other rules that come in, filed rate doctrine. I mean, there's various implications of using a tariff that are not contained in the federal act. And the question is, are you putting in too much state authority or a procedure in a procedure that the federal act clearly says shall be done by negotiation, arbitration, and then federal review.
Isn't
and does
it true,
using a tariff
though, counsel, that the pre-existing interconnection agreement stipulated to use this procedure for future rate making?
The interconnection agreements said that a generic state proceeding could affect the rates. None of them said, I don't think there's the word a tariff proceeding in any of those interconnection agreements. And certainly, even if there was, to the extent that if this court believes a buy applies, the parties don't have any authority to waive preemption or subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, setting aside the meaning of that case, is there anything else that would prohibit parties from agreeing in an interconnection agreement to use this procedure for future rate making?
I'm not aware of any, but again, there's nothing in those agreements that says using state tariffs. They all talk about generic rate making proceedings, which could be read as a proceeding pursuant to Section 252G of the Federal Act, or the FCC's first report and order, which in paragraph 693 talks about rulemakings and combined arbitrations. Oh. But there's nothing there about tariff proceedings.
What about this particular proceeding makes it not a Section 252 proceeding? Just the fact that it wasn't preceded by negotiations, or is there something else?
Well, that is primarily it. And under Section 252G, it says that the commissions can use a generic proceeding for proceedings under this act and under 252, or this section. 252 is negotiation and arbitration. So it's combined arbitrations. And Judge Castillo, the lower court judge in this case, found that 252 did not apply. He found that instead the FCC's order perhaps gave the commission jurisdiction or the ability to do this, but not the federal act. I mean, he had found that there was independent authority under the for the FCC to allow tariff proceedings. I don't think the FCC said the word tariff in that order, and we question whether the FCC has the ability to go beyond the Federal Act, where the Federal Act doesn't talk about that, and where, again, this court has interpreted the Federal Act to preclude tariff proceedings. Now, in addition to preemption, there are a couple of typical rate-making issues in here that we've also challenged. The first is the fill factor, which is the percentage of the telecommunications network that will be used by SBC. There are several methods in here, but the ones that are real...
Let me ask you, are you challenging the bottom line? That is, do you say that the state commission's final conclusion is not a reasonable estimate of TELRIC?
I mean, the dollar cost after all the calculations
after
are made.
After all the calculations are done, all the good things for you and all the bad things for you.
Implicitly, yes. If we're saying that
you
they
mean
did
implicitly,
well, if they
you
did,
you've either said so explicitly or not.
Okay, I will say explicitly because the commission
did you
used
make
improper
such an argument in the district court. I didn't certainly didn't find it in your brief here.
No, it was simply that the components
the reason
that
I
were
ask
wrong.
This is because I thought we were quite clear in 2003 that there should not be challenges to these subordinate decisions. Indeed, that was one reason why the state law was problematic. That the right question, as the Supreme Court said in its TELRIC case and has been saying for a long time in rate making, is the bottom line rather than the subsidiary steps.
I don't
here we have only a discussion of the subsidiary steps.
And I don't know how you get to the bottom line without looking at the subsidiary steps.
But that has been the Supreme Court's view of rate making since the 1930s. When it overruled all old cases looking at the subsidiary steps, such as calculating the rate of return and so on. And it reiterated that in its TELRIC decision.
Well, I know the Supreme Court has done that, for example, on
it is Verizon,
due process. But, again, you can't get to the bottom line without looking at the components. I don't think the Supreme Court was giving the commission
the way you
free
get to
ride.
The bottom, look, the way you get to the bottom line without looking at these components is to produce before the commission an independent estimate of what it costs to provide these network elements for a new reasonably efficient producer. All this accounting stuff is an extremely backward way of getting at it. Now, if you produce such a thing to the commission and the commission says that's baloney, and there does so on bad grounds, seems to me reviewable. But if you've never made an independent estimate of what a TELRIC rate would be, hard to see how you upset the commission.
I haven't seen that requirement that, again, the way the FCC's first report order, it sets out a whole set of rules of how state commissions shall interpret the federal act, and in fact the FCC set a standard, the TELRIC standard. It gave specific rules and procedures and how the commission should use TELRIC. The Illinois Commerce Commission used those rules and procedures. We think that some of them were incorrect, and we're here challenging that. I'm not too sure how else we could proceed other than saying it's violating the FCC's order by doing things the FCC said don't do.
How would my proposal violate an order of the FCC?
Well, we're arguing that the components of the rate making of the Illinois Commerce Commission were inconsistent with various FCC holdings, either the first report and order, the Verizon arbitration case, and whatever other precedents there are out there.
Look, my question is, what order of the FCC would my proposal violate? You said it would violate an order of the FCC. I'm just asking you what order it would violate.
If you misunderstood me, I was saying that the Illinois Commerce Commission order, we're arguing that various components of that violate the FCC. To the extent that one of my clients, our clients all got together and presented our own cost of service study and presented that to the ICC, again, it would come down to components. SBC would argue this component is wrong, that component is wrong, and the commission would choose. You know, it's even unclear what they would do. Would they just say, we'll take this guy's, or will they say, we'll take this from column A and this from column B and come up with a total rate? Again, how do we challenge that if we're not allowed to look at the individual components? It's simply not possible to come to a court. And I don't believe that the Federal Act or the Supreme Court has said, has given really the state commissions complete freedom to issue whatever rates it wishes unless someone challenges the total amount. I see that my time is over, so I will save 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I'll be back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Livingston.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the Court, Ted Livingston for Illinois Bell. A quick word, how I'd like to proceed, if it's all right with the Court, is to address first the matters raised by the carrier's appeal, preemption, and the inputs to the rates, fill factors, depreciation, cost of capital, and then address my cross appeal. With respect to the matter Your Honor just raised, we claimed in the district court that by committing a legal error in calculating cost of capital, that is violating the FCC's rules concerning how that was to be done, the ICC set a rate that was too low. I'd also submit that in order to determine whether a rate is reasonable and is TELRIC compliant, I hate to really agree with my opponent, but you really do need to look at individual inputs, because that's also how the FCC dealt with challenges to rates in 271 cases. It looked at individual inputs.
My problem is that looking at individual lines is, first, inconsistent with our holding in 2003, which no one seems to have paid any attention to, where we expressly said this was not to be done. It's, second, inconsistent with the Supreme Court's holdings on utility rate making, which are all expressly bottom line, not only in telecom, but in natural gas and so on. And third, it's inconsistent with the whole premise of TELRIC. Competitive rates are not set by looking at individual subspecies of costs. They're set by looking at the cost of new entry. So what you're trying to get us to do is so fundamentally incompatible with a forward-looking competitive system that I don't see how we can possibly engage in it. First, we'd have to overrule our 2003 decision, and then we would have to just abandon how prices are set in competition.
I don't believe you'd need to abandon, nor do I think that we disregarded this court's opinion in 2003.
We said, as I know how to write, that this was not to be done. And now both sides are just digging about in the stuff about what is the right lifetime and what is the right fill rate without any reference to the fact that we said this didn't matter and was indeed incompatible with TELRIC.
What we did in the district court, Your Honor, first of all, we came to the ICC with a rate. And that rate was in the $26 range for a loop. We said this is TELRIC compliant. And we submitted voluminous testimony and evidence to support that proposition. The pre-existing rate was in the $9 range on a statewide average basis. At the end of the day, the ICC picked some inputs from us, some inputs from the carriers, and some inputs from its staff, came up with a rate in the $13 range on a statewide average basis. In the district court, we claimed that that rate was too low because the ICC had committed a legal error in calculating cost of capital. So we did say that's the rate and it's too low. And if the cost of capital was properly calculated in accordance with the FCC rules, then we would have no complaint. Then you would have a reasonable TELRIC compliant rate. That was the essence of our sole claim in the district court. And the district court agreed with us. A quick word about preemption. That's the threshold issue. I submit this case is really nothing like B. In B, everything that mattered was done outside the 252 process and bypassed that process. Here, everything was within the process. The ICC proceeding was consistent with 252. It implemented what the parties had agreed to in their agreements, their 252 agreements, and it was expressly authorized by the FCC rules. All the carriers had these negotiated contracts, and they contained freely negotiated provisions that said prices are going to be set in proceedings of general applicability, and when they're updated in those kinds of proceedings, the agreements will be amended to incorporate the new rates. And they told the ICC this proceeding is such a proceeding. They expressly said that over and over again. This is such a proceeding, and it is permissible under both B and 252. In fact, they said it was okay to proceed as a tariff investigation, so long as it was not pursuant to a specific state statute, 9201 of the Illinois Public Utility Commission, because that would require a decision in 11 months, and they wanted more time. They never raised with the ICC the point, we want to negotiate about prices. They never said, stop the proceeding so we can negotiate about prices. In fact, there were negotiations of the pricing provision that said prices are going to be set in precisely this fashion, and when they're updated in precisely this fashion, the agreements will be amended to incorporate the new rates. A quick word about fill factors. They say that the adjustments were arbitrary and capricious. They're wrong. The ICC couldn't adopt the carrier's proposal because it violated the FCC's cardinal rule that the network had to be sized to meet all current and reasonably foreseeable demand. They started with ours because there was substantial evidence that when originally deployed, that was efficiently and properly sized. But they said no one's perfect. There probably were innocent mistakes. There's some unquantifiable amount of excess capacity, probably. So the problem was trying to estimate and make adjustments for this indeterminate and presumed excess capacity. They used rational guiding principles. They relied on expert testimony from their staff. And they reasoned their way rigorously to an estimate, to a judgment. The carriers don't suggest other numbers, and they don't suggest how the ICC could possibly have achieved greater precision. It doesn't require, TELRIC doesn't require precision. It requires a reasonable estimate, and these estimates were certainly that. In fact, they were more favorable to the carriers than the ones approved by the FCC in the Georgia case, the 271 case, and they were more reasonable and more favorable to the carriers than those adopted by Indiana in a case that the carriers themselves say was adequately supported. Quick word about depreciation. This case presented a choice between financial lives and regulatory lives. The FCC has said both are consistent with TELRIC. The FCC has also said the choice is within the discretion of the State Commission to make. And the State Commission here heard evidence, competing evidence, from both sides on this issue and chose financial lives. And they also did what they claimed the Virginia order of the Wireline Competition Bureau required. That is,
how can the Wireline Competition Bureau require anything?
It could require certain showings in the Virginia arbitration where it was standing in the shoes of the Virginia State Commission because the Virginia State Commission had declined to hear the matter. I think the McCarty case...
I don't understand. How can a competition bureau at the FCC ever require anything? Under the statute and under the APA, the commissioners can require something. But a bunch of employees lack any authority to make rules for the conduct of other decisions.
If I could operate on a blank slate, I would agree wholeheartedly with Your Honor. The McCarty case seems to say, this court's decision in the McCarty case seems to say that where the Wireline Competition Bureau was announcing a rule of law, or more precisely, interpreting...
Was this question litigated in McCarty? I think both the statute and the APA are crystal clear. Agencies can make rules by rulemaking or by adjudication. The decision has to be made by the commissioners. And the Wireline Competition Bureau ain't the commissioners.
It was addressed in the briefs in the Seventh Circuit. And the Seventh Circuit said that interpretations by the Wireline Competition Bureau of FCC rules was entitled to deference.
What does that have to do with this? I mean, the Supreme Court sometimes says that interpretations by an agency's lawyer may be given some deference, but it doesn't mean that the lawyer can make independent rules.
Well, I don't think it does anything.
Declarations with any legal effect.
I don't think it does anything with respect to depreciation. They simply said that in order to have financial eyes be adopted, the incumbent had to prove that they're a more appropriate measure of actual economic life. That's fine. Any state commission would say that. And in this case, Illinois Bell and its expert did exactly that. It made that showing, and the ICC so found. Where I think it comes into play is with respect to our cross appeal on digital loop carrier equipment. There, the Wireline Competition Bureau made a fact finding based on Verizon's failure to meet its standard of proof or to satisfy its standard of proof, made a fact finding that it was technically feasible to unbundle IDLC. In our case, and the district court committed legal error in our view, by saying that was entitled to deference and it precluded everything that happened in our case. In our case, we had a robust record that showed that IDLC is costly and difficult to unbundle and not the most cost-effective technology for unbundling. UDLC is. The ICC looked at that and, based on substantial evidence and a deliberate reasoned process, concluded that we were right, and the district court ignored that entirely. And under any accepted principle of administrative law, it seems to me the ICC should have been affirmed. The district court declined even to examine its record, even to examine its decision, and I think erroneously relied on a fact finding by this bureau. And the district court in Wisconsin looked at this very issue after Judge Castillo looked at it and disagreed with Judge Castillo and agreed with us in a decision that we've cited in our briefs. So I think that's where this issue that you and I have been discussing, Your Honor, most vividly comes into play.
Seems to me it's equally pertinent whether the decision cuts for you or against you.
I think this is the...
You're relying on the Wireline Competition Bureau in all respects in which it helps you and disavowing it in all respects in which it doesn't help you. It seems to me it either counts or it doesn't count. It can't count when it helps you and be irrelevant when it hurts you.
Well, we relied on it in the district court with respect to cost of capital, and the district court ruled against us, said that their finding that market values were required by law was not right, and their determination was not entitled to deference. In this court, what we're relying on for cost of capital are the FCC rules that require a competitive market where price is determined by competition and all customers are in play. The ICC chose a market that's regulated, price determined by regulation, at least in part, and some customers are captive. clear legal error. We're relying on FCC rules. We're not relying in this court on the Wireline Competition Bureau. The Wireline Competition Bureau comes into play in our case, in this court, only with respect to our cross appeal and only because we believe the district court committed clear legal error by ignoring entirely the record before the ICC and instead deferring to this fact finding in another case based on another record. So I don't think this is a case where we're asking Your Honor to ignore it where it hurts us and accept it where it helps us. I'd be glad to answer any questions Your Honor might have, or Your Honors might have.
Thank you, Mr. Livingston. Mr. Stanton.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to briefly address the preemption issue, highlighting the positions that the CLECs took at the ICC and in contrast to the positions that they took before the district court. Upon reinstating the 020864 proceeding after this court's decision in AT&T, the ICC asked the parties to brief the potential impact of the AT&T and B decisions on the reopened proceeding. Both SBC and the CLECs assured the Commission that the generic rate-making proceeding was authorized by and consistent with the Act, and also it was the agreed mechanism by which the parties would implement changes to the rates in their interconnection agreements. The CLECs further told the ICC that, quote, the tariff provisions of the Illinois law provide an appropriate vehicle for the parties in the ICC to make generic determinations of SBC's uni rates. And the ICC agreed with the CLECs, noting that the proceeding would be conducted procedurally as a tariff investigation, but substantively it was a generic rate-making proceeding. Now, the CLECs also told the ICC that, quote, nothing in B, that's Wisconsin Bell versus B, or otherwise prevents this case from proceeding as a review of SBC's proposed uni tariffs to consider whether SBC's existing uni tariffs should remain in effect or be revised, unquote. So despite what they told the ICC, the CLECs would now have the court believe that a comprehensive proceeding that they fully endorsed and fully participated in, consisting of 122 record volumes, was a futile exercise. And that's just not believable. The CLECs were right the first time at the ICC. They changed their position in the district court after they were dissatisfied with the substantive outcome of the pricing proceeding at the ICC. Now, with respect to fill factors and depreciation, I can only add that those are precisely the type of evidentiary matters that reviewing courts routinely defer to an agency's technical expertise and experience. The CLECs are asking the court to second-guess the ICC on highly technical and complex rate-making matters. The ICC heard the evidence, explained its decision, engaged in deliberate, principled reasoning, and based its decision on substantial evidence in the record. They're merely asking the court to reweigh the evidence and substitute the court's judgment for that of the ICC to reach a different result, and that's something that the reviewing court should not do. And I'd just like to, Judge Easterbrook, you were talking about the standard of review in the AT&T case. Unlike the private parties, I'm not going to disagree whether the ultimate result should be telecompliant or not, or rather than look at the individual components. So if there are any further questions for the panel, Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Moore?
Just a little bit. First of all, on the issue Mr. Stanton was just talking about, the various briefs that the CLECs filed telling the Commission, go ahead and do it this way, there was a progression. First, there were a series of briefs discussing the impact of VI, and in that we told the Commission, yes, you can do this in a generic proceeding. However, in that briefing, SBC made it clear that it believed that its tariff filing that started this whole thing was involuntary, that it had been forced to do so. And so we filed an emergency motion with the Commission warning them that this case, if it was going to proceed under the tariff procedure with SBC claiming that it was doing so involuntarily, that it would be subject to being reversed under this court's ruling in the BI case. So there's a progression of briefings. There were really three briefs if you look at the two that have been attached by the Commission and by SBC to their briefs, and by the one that we attached to our reply brief before this court. You'll see that there's a progression of pleadings and that we did warn the Commission about this in the Commission, that first time before the district court. As for the other issues, we'll probably beat them with a dead horse. I won't go too much into the fill factor depreciation, other than to say that on the fill factor, there's simply the commission took a number and picked it out of the sky. You know, 15%, 7%, added it to what SBC already had, and used that as a number with really no basis for it whatsoever. And as a result, it doesn't pass the you know, the logic test, in the sense that the number ended up being lower than their existing or previous figure used in the last rate case. Even though we have technology coming on that should make things more efficient, they ended up with a less efficient network. On depreciation, here we are really relying on the Virginia case, where the FCC did look at reject the financial reporting, and instead found that TELRIC requires a more forward-looking type of analysis, which SBC did not do, and the Illinois Commerce Commission did not do in its calculations. And finally, again, hating to agree with Mr. Livingston, but you know, this court is the one that, in the McCarty case, did state that you know, we find the WCB's pronouncement on this issue not only persuasive, but one requiring deference as the voice of the FCC interpreting its own rules. And the court decision there does go through the FCC's rules of what authority the Wireline Competition Bureau has, and the court did spell out that authority. It also spelled out the authority of the FCC to take cases like the Virginia arbitration case, which, in essence, it was doing the same thing as the Illinois Commerce Commission. So it's one reason that people tend to cite that, is because that case has the FCC doing exactly what the state commissions are doing. It's not some you know, overall pie-in-the-sky type analysis. It's down in the dirt, trying to decide what rules of the TELRIC would we be applying
if
when we're setting rates ourselves.
You keep referring to the FCC.
Well, the wireline competition.
Has the FCC done these things?
No, the wireline competition bureau
wireline
standing in the shoes.
Wireline competition bureau is a bunch of employees of the FCC. Why should we pay it any heed?
Because the FCC, pursuant to its authority, has delegated authority to sit as a hearing examiner, in essence, over an arbitration.
Exactly. And if you want to figure out what federal labor law is, you look at decisions by the National Labor Relations Board and not the decisions of its administrative law judges. If you want to look at what federal antitrust is, you look at decisions of the Federal Trade Commission, not decisions of its, you know, Bureau of Competition. Why should we be looking at decisions of the Wireline Competition Bureau rather than those of the commissioners?
Well, if you want to see what the FCC, through its Wireline Competition Bureau, has done on an individual arbitration, there is no FCC order on an individual arbitration. This is the only game in town, the Wireline Competition Bureau. There are FCC orders on other things, but not on an individual arbitration.
Do you think in labor law we would ever look at a decision of an ALJ to figure out what federal labor law is, or that we would ever look at a proposal of the FTC's Bureau of Competition?
No, of course not. But
well, then why isn't the answer, of course not, what the Wireline Competition Bureau is doing is irrelevant?
Because,
you know, it's the same legal structure, the same Administrative Procedure Act that tells us that it's the decisions of the commissioners of the NLRB and not their subordinates, tells us that it's the decisions of the commissioners of the FCC and not their subordinates that matter. Pretty fundamental.
Again, this court thought differently in McCarty, and that's all I can say at this point. Thank you. My time is up. I appreciate it.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.